This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Thursday, January 17th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll go to Kane County, where the Latino vote could make the difference in several hotly contested primaries in that part of Illinois. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, getting very chilly by this weekend. But first, a look at today's news. Champaign County's Healthcare Consumers Group has thrown its support behind a state lawsuit against Carlin Christie Clinics. The Illinois Attorney General's suit that was filed last June is over the denial of new Medicaid patients from the area over a nearly four-year period. The state says the clinics broke antitrust laws by forcing the state to raise Medicaid reimbursements, since many patients had to go to emergency rooms before they were treated. The Healthcare Consumers Executive Director Claudia Lenhoff says the lawsuit justifies a lot of the complaints received in her office.
And as we go through the lawsuit, you will actually see the Attorney General's office putting forward a lot of the same information that we put forward, but that they found through their in-depth investigation. And for us, as we go through this, it's essentially very validating that the information and the experiences that we see from working through the hotline are good sources, good reliable sources of what's happening in the community.
Lenhoff says after the spring of 2003, the lawsuit shows the clinics adopted identical policies for turning away Medicaid patients. She says both Carl and Christie clinics have also started to remove established patients on Medicaid without notice. A hearing in Urbana today is over the clinic's motion to have the lawsuit dismissed. A spokeswoman for Carl Clinic, Jennifer Hendricks-Kaufman, says its staff anticipates the hearing as part of the legal process. Christie Clinic didn't return a call seeking comment. A 10-year veteran of the Parkland College Administration has been named as its new permanent president. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
Parkland trustees voted unanimously last night to hire Dr. Tom Ramage as their permanent president. The 40-year-old Ramage has run the community college in Champaign on an interim basis since his predecessor Robert Exley stepped down unexpectedly last June. Ramage came to Parkland in 1998 as chair of the Distance and Virtual Learning Department. He then moved into higher administrative roles, including vice president for academic services. Ramage says he hopes to stay with Parkland a long time.
I'm eligible to retire in about 15 years. That's eligible. I have no intention of being any place other than Parkland College. I could be extraordinarily satisfied to end my career as president of Parkland College. That's my focus and my goal.
Parkland Board President Jim Ayers says Ramage has performed well as interim president and has the support of faculty and staff. Ramage will work for Parkland on a 30-month contract with a starting salary of $170,000. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The director of the Champaign County Nursing Home says the stage is being set for a rare profitable year this year, but Andrew Buffenbarger says the often money-losing facility would still be served well by an advisory board to help oversee operations. Speaking on Focus 580 yesterday, Buffenbarger said the new nursing home that opened last year is already starting to produce results over the former, much older facility.
We believe that building that new building was a good idea. It was a wise business decision, and I think that the deficits are going to end here in the next 12 to 18 months. In fact, we're running currently, we've had the last few months, we're in our fourth month now of positive cash flow, which is remarkable for us.
A revised proposal for our nursing home advisory board would include two Champaign County board members and would leave larger decisions to the county board. The full county board is set to vote on the plan next week. An earlier proposal for a separate board to oversee the home met with opposition from some county board members. Illinois' General Assembly is expected to take up an amended mass transit funding bill that includes Governor Rod Blagojevich's proposal to offer free rides to senior citizens. The vote today follows the approval of the measure on Wednesday by a key state legislative committee. The House Mass Transit Committee voted 16-5 to support the free ride amendment that the governor added to the mass transit funding bill. Blagojevich says he won't sign that bill if legislators don't approve the free ride initiative. Some lawmakers say they're angry at the last-minute addition. The committee members say they had no choice but to support it or risk forcing doomsday service cuts and fare increases this weekend. Many disabled veterans in Illinois are now eligible for a new property tax break that took effect January 1st. Under the new homestead exemption for veterans with disabilities, veterans who are 50% to 75% disabled may apply for a $2,500 property tax exemption. Veterans even more severely disabled qualify for a $5,000 exemption. The Veterans Administration determines the level of disability. Quad City State Representative Mike Boland sponsored the bill. His younger brother, who was injured during the Vietnam War, struggled after he came home and eventually died.
Some of the things that he went through, some of the trauma that he went through, not only in Vietnam but afterwards, probably shortened his life. He was 5 years younger than me. My older brother was a combat veteran in Korea. And so those things kind of brought it really close to home for me.
The new law also makes troops returning home from active duty eligible for a one-time $5,000 property tax exemption. A plan by a Bloomington-based electric cooperative to raise money for charity by automatically billing customers for small donations on their monthly statements has aroused the concern of the Attorney General's office. Earlier this month, Corn Belt Energy enrolled its central Illinois members in Operation Roundup. The program rounds up electric bills to the nearest dollar, and local charitable organizations can then apply for a portion of the extra money raised. Corn Belt first introduced the idea in November. Customers learned of the automatic enrollment and opt-out guidelines in a newsletter with their January bill. Spokeswoman Natalie Bowers says the Attorney General's office plans to look into the specifics of the program, how it's operated, and how members were notified. Corn Belt spokesman Dave Hawkinson says of 32,600 Corn Belt members, 2,000 have opted out of the program so far. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. The number of naturalized citizens in suburbs ringing Chicago is growing fast, but some still face barriers when they try to vote. In a lawsuit last fall, the U.S. Department of Justice charged that Kane County had violated parts of the Federal Voting Rights Act. County officials quickly agreed to remedy the situation, and the first big test of whether Kane County is living up to the agreement is February 5th. That's when the Latino vote might make the difference in several hotly contested primaries. Chip Mitchell has more.
Republican poll watcher Bob Sperlazzo lives in Carpentersville, a hotspot in the nation's debate over undocumented immigrants. Sperlazzo says one reason he became a poll watcher was to help make sure no illegal aliens are voting in Kane County elections. He saw that with his own eyes, he says, in municipal balloting last April.
When those people came in to vote, I was sitting there with my book in my hand that said this person lived in this house that was empty, or this person basically was not registered to vote, but here they are. We are, the citizens are basically having their process of government undermined by citizens of foreign countries coming in and changing the election results.
Kane County officials say they have no hard evidence undocumented immigrants have committed voter fraud. And Elva Mejia is ticked off about this kind of scrutiny of Latinos at the polls. This week, Mejia helped the county launch early voting for the February 5th primaries. She's at St. Monica's, the biggest church in Carpentersville, one of several balloting sites.
She'll help you. Now, everybody went through. Now, he has to accept it again.
In cast ballot again.
And then that he's done.
Now he has to do. Mejia is helping a 36-year-old from El Salvador who's struggling with an electronic voting machine.
If I wasn't here, we would lose a vote, and their vote won't count. And we're stressing as the Hispanic community that your vote will count.
Mejia became an election judge after eye-opening experiences as a 2006 poll watcher for an immigrant rights group. Several precincts in heavily Latino areas opened hours late. Many lacked bilingual judges, and Mejia says one judge scolded a voter for bringing his daughter to the booth to help interpret.
How can so many precincts have a problem? If it's not racial, why did Carpentersville have this many problems?
At the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, Ricardo Mesa was asking himself the same question. Before last April's election, he alerted the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice.
Just because an individual doesn't speak English very well, or maybe not at all, does not mean that that person is not a U.S. citizen, does not mean that that person is not properly registered. It is the job of the clerk's office to make certain that those attitudes and those stereotypes are not in place when folks come in to vote.
What happened next caught Kane County Clerk John Cunningham off guard.
Because I felt very well there's been substantial compliance in Kane County, because even before I came here, they had already translated all of the election documents, even our insert into the papers, from English to Spanish to accommodate that particular law.
That's the Federal Voting Rights Act.
And so the Attorney General's office sent two people into our office to sit down and to ask us if it'd be all right if they would monitor that election up there. And so they were up there, and the election was over, and I called their office, and they said, talk to your lawyer. So at that time, I knew there was an issue.
The Department of Justice filed its suit in September. This kind of enforcement is on the rise. Since 2002, the feds have brought 26 lawsuits nationwide to protect Spanish-speaking voters. Kane County didn't admit liability, but quickly signed a 14-page agreement. It promised to provide 71 bilingual election judges. But with the election just 3 weeks away, the county has signed up just 54.
Why don't you all just kind of crowd around this board that I've got up here for a moment? I want to go over this dual election thing one more time.
And many of the judges still have to go through this three-hour session with part-time county elections trainer George Tim. And that's not all. To make the voting process more accessible, the Department of Justice also forced Kane County to appoint a Spanish-language election coordinator and a Hispanic advisory committee.
It hasn't made a difference.
Linda Ramirez-Lewinsky of Carpentersville serves on that committee.
They don't want the Latinos coming out to vote. The last meeting was actually canceled. They're still short Hispanic election judges or bilingual election judges. As far as I know, they have no translators. Jack is just going through the motions.
Jack is the nickname of Cunningham, the Kane County clerk. For his part, Cunningham says his office will post bilingual election judges wherever they're needed February 5th. He says everyone who's eligible to vote will get to cast a ballot. I'm Chip Mitchell.
Today's forecast calls for a chance of snow this morning, then likely in the afternoon. Accumulations of about an inch expected, with a high around 35, blustery, with southwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts up to 30. Mostly cloudy tonight, the low around 20. Partly sunny tomorrow, with a 30% chance of snow in the afternoon, the high around 32 degrees, and gusty winds up to 25 miles per hour. Colder tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, the low around 9 degrees. Colder and mostly sunny Saturday, the high around 12. Partly cloudy Saturday night and Sunday, with lows around 2 below zero, the high around 15. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, with a low around 7. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, January 17th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.